Finance Committee will come to order. Just kind of an update. Apologize about the delay. It's that time of year. We are moving things as quickly as we can. We're going to hear House File 1654, Representative Adkins' bill. This will be an informational hearing only. We also had our walkthrough. We are postponing our walkthrough of the bill. There is a spreadsheet issue that we're trying to get ironed out as we speak. Mr. Berg and Ms. Iverson are working on that. When we have additional information, we will update the committee, and I expect an update in the interim as this bill is being presented. And again, this bill is for information only. So with that, I will invite Representative Adkins to come forward with House File 1654 for an informational hearing.
Mr. Chair?
Ms. Loeffler, Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit more about what you're expecting in terms of when we might get the spreadsheet, and walking through a 35-page spreadsheet with a lot of new entries that we haven't seen before takes quite a bit of time, and so we want to make sure that the public and your members and our members have a chance to really understand the lines. And can you give us a sense of, you know, do you think after a brief overview of this bill we'll have it in hand, or what's the expectation?
Representative Loeffler, I just spoke to Mr. Berg, and he's working on it, doing the best he can, and he's going to give me an update during the committee, and then we'll have an update for the committee when I get that. But I want to make sure that we get it right, and we're looking, we want to make sure that we get the spreadsheet right, it's locked down, and before we present it to committee, and I want to make sure that we do that. So,
and Mr. Chair, we all share that, and we know that the billions of dollars represented in this budget touches tons of lives, you know, hundreds of thousands of people across Minnesota, in addition to the people who are in this audience who have been following, you know, step by step the plot as it evolves. And we need to make sure that we have fair hearing and fair understanding, because like I said, there's many new things that we haven't seen the fiscal notes on, we haven't seen the proposals, and we'd really like to understand your intent as we move forward. So you're thinking we'll get an update fairly soon?
Yep, I just spoke with Mr. Berg, and he's heading up, and we'll have an update for the committee as soon as I get that back, and appreciate your interest in allowing the public to weigh in. And these spreadsheets, as you know, are very complicated, and they deal with both billions of dollars of both federal and state funds, and there's lots of interactions, and there's always issues with this spreadsheet, but we want to make sure that we get her dialed in and get her locked down, and that's what we're going to do. We'll have an update for the committee as soon as that's available. Representative Adkins, welcome to the Health and Human Services Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Are you sure you want to just do this informationally, Mr. Chairman? Shouldn't we just set it to, we need a consent calendar for bills like these, don't we?
Well, it's, we have deadline issues and other things, but we do appreciate you coming in on short notice, Representative Adkins, for this, and have had a lot of interest from members. So we want to afford you the opportunity for House File 1654. We do realize it's a very busy week with lots of things going on, so appreciate you being able to do this on short notice, Representative Adkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. In light of how busy this committee is, I think rather than make opening comments myself, if I might reserve just a couple minutes at the end, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to turn it directly over to my testifiers to walk through their testimony, and then we'll come back for questions. Is that all right?
That would be great.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Mary Turner. Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Mary Turner, and I'm a trauma neurointensive care nurse at North Memorial Medical Center in Robbinsdale. I've been a nurse for 20 years, working in both intensive care units and on the medical surgical units. My colleagues at North Memorial and I are forced to deal with unsafe staffing situations on a regular basis. We are assigned too many patients to safely care for at one time. preventing us from giving the quality care that our patients deserve and that we want to provide. The situation is getting worse, especially as health care changes. We now deal with patients who are much sicker than ever before, meaning they need more nursing care than ever before. In the ICU are the patients with the highest acuity or the highest level of sickness are. Nurses generally care for two patients at a time. However, we are also responsible for responding to all the medical emergencies and codes on the other floors. When the ICU staff go to help, and it's frequently, the ICU is left dangerously understaffed. This happened to me one night not too long ago. Several medical emergencies and two cardiac arrest codes were called 10 minutes apart. All available resources like the charge nurses, the critical care nurse flyers, all responded to these emergencies, but it was not enough. Two additional nurses from my unit were needed on the medical surgical floors to assist with patients who were crashing and needed intensive care nursing immediately. My fellow nurses were out on the floors for more than 2 hours while I and one other nurse took on watching and caring for 9 patients left in the ICU. I was now responsible for 4 to 5 critical patients. Patients that if anything had happened to any of them during these 2 hours, I would have had no resources or help. To put this into perspective for you, when a patient is in trouble in the ICU, it can often take up to 4 nurses all working together on that patient to pull them through the crisis. At North Memorial and others, we are seeing staff reductions instead of ensuring that proper number of nurses per patient. The hospital recently changed our staffing grid in spite of our vehement protests, making a bad situation even worse. It is heartbreaking for nurses not to provide the best care possible to every patient. We can't give everyone their meds on time, take them to the bathrooms, turn them, or educate them when it's time to go home. And we are doing everything we can to cover the gaps and make sure patients are cared for, but we are at a breaking point and things have got to change. Patients suffer when there aren't enough staff, which happens frequently. We are seeing more health issues like pressure ulcers, falls, and hospital readmissions. Patients are giving negative feedback because they see the problems. They know something is wrong when they have to wait so long for a nurse to answer their calls. I've seen patients lie awake for hours in pain. Patients who end up soiling themselves because their nurse was unable to get to them in time to go to the bathroom. To see these patients humiliated, ashamed, and apologetic is heart-rending to watch. Is the bottom line worth it? You can't run a hospital like a factory, but that's exactly what's happening. Staffing cuts are continuing to be made. While patient satisfaction scores are plummeting, healthcare corporations are proceeding to reorganize, modernize, mechanize, and using every other gimmick in the book, besides providing enough nurses to give our patients the self-care, the safe care they need and deserve. Because the real bottom line, people, is that when the patients put on their call lights, the words they utter are, "Where's my nurse? I want my nurse. I need my nurse." I urge you to support House File 1654 and create safe patient standards so nurses can do our work and we can take care of patients safely and compassionately. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. If you could introduce yourself.
Madam Chair and committee members, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Carrie Mortrude, and I've been a registered nurse since 1995. Before coming to work for M&A, I worked at Abbott Northwestern Hospital as a cardiac telemetry and cardiac intensive care nurse. I gave up bedside nursing 9 years ago for one reason. I couldn't safely care for my patients, which is why I'm sitting here in front of you today. The moment I gave up, is one I will likely never forget. When I was told to put one of the two cardiac ICU patients I was caring for in the hallway so I could receive a third, I knew then something in hospital care was seriously wrong. What's wrong is staffing levels in hospitals. Nurses don't have the time they need to give patients the care they not only deserve, but the care they require. The Minnesota Nurses Association believes the best solution is sitting in front of you now, setting a safe patient standard for patients in every hospital in Minnesota, ensuring that no matter where a patient gets care, they know a minimum number of staff are there to care for them. The safe patient standard is set for each facility depending on their patient census, acuity, and staff size, which will ensure local flexibility. Nurses often cope with short staffing by choosing which tasks to perform for each patient and which ones they cannot. Some days it's only 5 of 10. When a doctor wonders why a test or therapy didn't get performed or completed, it's probably because the nurse had to decide which one was least critical and put it at the bottom of the to-do list. This is substandard care. To document this, nurses submit a concern for safe staffing form for incidents of substandard care due to staffing. The reports are anecdotal, but the numbers of those anecdotes continue to rise. In 2014, we collected more than 2,000 concern for safe staffing forms, the highest ever. These folders all represent those forms from 2014 alone. So far this year, we've received 674 as of yesterday. These two folders have 2015 in them. These are incidents you won't find in the annual adverse events report because they aren't severe enough. Here's how these reports break down. In 114 cases, the patient's length of stay was increased. 368 times a call light went unanswered. In 218 cases, assessments were not completed. 152 times, a patient suffered inadequate pain management, and 415 times, treatment was delayed. Later in the hour, you're going to hear about the cost of health care. Staffing in hospitals absolutely affects the cost of care. Less care means longer stays. Less time with a patient means more 911 calls from a recently discharged patient. And currently, 12 Minnesota hospitals are being penalized by the Center for Medicaid and Medicare for high rates of readmissions. Madam Chair and committee members, staffing has a financial effect on facilities. Staffing also has a very human effect on Minnesotans. We thank you for this time and your continued attention on this issue.
Thank you for your testimony. We do have a handful of other testifiers. I just have a quick question for the most recent testifier on these safe staffing forms. These came to my attention last summer when I heard from some nurses and as well as some folks at hospitals. Can you explain to me the process on those forms, please?
Sure. Madam Chair and committee members, what we encourage the nurses to do is to always talk with the charge nurse, usually the house supervisor, meaning a nurse in charge of the whole hospital, and the nurse manager if they're there at the time, to find out if there's extra staff available somewhere in-house that can come help. At that point, we see that as that's the notification and the attempt to try to resolve it before it gets to this point where they fill out a form. And on the form, we try to collect what was done to rectify the situation, et cetera. So that's kind of the process of how to fill out the form and what happens before that.
Okay. Thank you for the explanation. And I just ask, because I had some significant concerns and it followed up, and have spoken to some nursing folks about this, but just in terms of the process, when I had looked into some of it and was contacted by some nurses, it was something where those forms were submitted without necessarily first reporting within the rank of command, or, you know, to make sure that their patients were being safely cared for and that was brought to the attention of hospital staff. And I do know that these were brought to the Commissioner of Health as well, but I would just hope that those processes are first, because I also know some state representatives were sent these forms, and in following up came to find that in not all cases were people within the hospital notified, rather it was sent to the departments or to state representatives, and so hopefully that's been rectified, because obviously it's concerning if people within the hospital don't know about some of these incidents, but it's going outside of the hospital first. So that's just why I ask if some of those processes have been clarified within nursing staff for the safety of their patients, first and foremost. So I appreciate that very much. Next, we have, oh, Representative Atkins, did you have any other testifiers?
No, Madam Chair, if I might, I just wanted to clarify, just so that the record reflects, I asked Ms. Turner if every one of these forms reflects an individual patient, because I think that they do. Is that inaccurate?
Or it more than likely.
And I'm sorry to interrupt you. Could you just restate your name? I didn't catch your name the first time.
Mary Turner.
Okay, welcome. I'm sorry. Continue.
Those most likely either reflect a patient that happened, something that happened on a shift that the nurse felt was unsafe. This reflects an individual nurse, or sometimes they'll put more than one nurse on a form, and it'll reflect a shift that they feel is unsafe. Sometimes you'll have, if they've had a patient fall or something like that, they'll fill something out like that. In that case, yes, it could reflect one single patient.
Okay, thank you. And Ms. Turner, are those then filed both with the hospital and with the department, or where do those, where does that document go, or how many places does that document go?
The nurses, and you're right, we've had a lot of work on this as far as them notifying the proper chains of command. And we've seen significant improvement in the nurses going through their charge nurse and the house supervisors. They fill it out, and then they are to make a copy of it that they give to their manager. And then they also give one, well, and then it is electronically, goes to, a copy goes to the nurse, goes to the M&A co-chairs at each hospital, and then one automatically goes to M&A in St. Paul. But they are required to make a copy so that the manager does have it, and the manager, as a rule, knows about it because they've been contacted during the shift.
Okay. And Ms. Turner, are these safe staffing forms, is this a new development, or have these been around for quite a long time and they're starting to be utilized more, or is this a new thing that's been implemented for nurses fill out? Ms. Turner.
They have been around for a long time. But we have found the need to use them definitely more frequently in the last few years. But it's been a learning process for our nurses.
Sure. Okay. Thank you very much. Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Ms. Turner. My only point was to indicate that each of these may be one patient, but it could also be several patients. So when you're talking about thousands that are in these folders, you could be literally multiplying that by 3 or 4 or 5 or 10. And it does indicate on each form who was notified, if anyone was notified. With that, Madam Chair, I'm more than happy to hear from other folks who want to testify.
Madam Chair.
Thank you for allowing me to clarify that.
Sure. And for these testifiers, Representative Murphy.
Thanks, Madam Chair, very much. I just, to your line of questioning, and this may be a question better for Ms. Mortrud. When I went to work for the Minnesota Nurses Association back in 1991, I think they were already using the Concern for Safe Staffing form. It's a form that's been in place for a long time that originated with the Minnesota Nurses Association as a way to allow the nurses to make a record of what they were concerned with. But I'm wondering if you have any more background on that, Ms. Mortrud, and if you can share from your experience the difference between a Concern for Safe Staffing form and an incident report that is an official document of the hospital. And why there are two.
Ms. Mortrud. Madam Chair, Representative Murphy. Again, my name is Carrie Mortrud. Representative Murphy is referring to an incident form that a health professional is required by law to fill out when an incident happens. For instance, a medication is given 1 minute past the half-hour window of when it's due, when a patient falls, if the wrong medication is given. There's a whole list of reasons why we would fill out an incident report. And then they are sent to the quality department within the hospital, and that information stays internal. It's not accessible to us afterwards. There may be some follow-up if there needs to be a change in protocol on how to treat a certain patient or treat a certain medication so that it doesn't happen again. But that's very specific to an incident that occurs and stays, that document and data stays within the hospital. The Concern for Safe Staffing Forum was, from my knowledge, created to instigate a conversation about staffing specifically. At the time we fill it out and notify the manager and or house supervisor, an incident may not have already happened, but we feel that it could happen. So we are alerting the charge nurse and or manager and house supervisor that we're concerned about the safety of the patients. And again, sometimes that starts the conversation and it's rectified before the shift goes on and or before it's even filled out. If not, then this is a way for us to track the information. But it's always encouraged that you start with someone who may have more information and more power to get you more staff.
Representative Murphy, thank you, Madam Chair, very much. And so, Ms. Mortrude, as I hear you describe that, then is it fair to say that the Concern for Safe Staffing Forum has been put in place as a way to elevate the conversation about the safety of staffing between nurses and the people that are responsible for the staffing in the hospital?
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay, we have additional testifiers. We can first bring forward Laura Reed. Or you guys can go in whichever order you'd like. If you can just introduce yourself first and then proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to be here this afternoon at this informational hearing. My name is Lawrence Massa, and I'm the president and CEO of the Minnesota Hospital Association, which represents 143 hospitals and health systems in our state. Madam Chair and members of the committee, today I want to speak to you about why the Minnesota Hospital Association and its member hospitals and health systems oppose House File 1654 and mandatory nurse staffing quotas for hospitals. Plain and simple, it comes down to this. Establishing quotas does not equal quality. That said, we agree that staffing is clearly an important component for delivering high-quality care. Minnesota consistently ranks among the best states in the nation for providing high-quality health care. No matter what ranking system or service is used, Minnesota's hospitals and health systems consistently rank among the top tier of care provided in the nation. Everyone here today should be proud of this and equally proud of the collaborative work that it takes in Minnesota to deliver high-quality care. Every day, 365 days a year, 24 hours a day, in hospitals across the state, healthcare teams work together to ensure that high-quality care is maintained and enhanced. And Minnesota's hospitals and healthcare systems are committed to the idea of always striving to make healthcare better for Minnesotans. Our hospitals and health systems continually work to make healthcare better through established internal and external working groups, through ongoing study and research, and from applying what we know works at the bedside for each individual patient. We know that each patient is different. Each visit to a hospital or health system is unique, and each and every care plan must be as different and unique as the individual patient. A one-size-fits-all government-mandated nurse staffing quota that treats individual patients as if they are all the same is not in the best interest of patient care. Minnesota's hospitals and healthcare systems have achieved high-quality care because of a collaborative care team approach. That involves physicians, nurses, therapists, and numerous other healthcare professionals who work together using their own professional skills and judgment. Quotas will not improve quality. They will limit flexibility and innovation. Minnesota currently has about 95,700 licensed registered nurses, and of that number, just over 20% are members of the Minnesota Nurses Association, National Nurses United. This legislation is part of a national union's advocacy efforts to push staffing quotas across the country. Technology and care delivery are changing rapidly. Many healthcare experts predict that we may not need the number of hospitals or hospital beds that we currently have because more and more services can be safely delivered in outpatient settings. This trend is also contributing to the national effort by the nurses' unions to seek mandatory staffing ratios. There is only one state in the nation, California, that has adopted mandatory staffing quotas, and there is little direct evidence that this has significantly improved quality of care in California. As previously stated, of course, staffing is important, and Minnesota hospitals would not have the quality scores that we have if we did not have sufficient, well-trained, and dedicated nurses on our care teams. We know what does improve quality, and that's what we are committed to focusing on, sharing best practice, training, teamwork, collaboration, new technology, and innovation. Minnesota hospitals are committed to working on these goals with the members of our care teams, our patients, and our communities. Thank you for your time this afternoon, and we look forward to working with you on healthcare policy issues affecting our state. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Whoever wants to go next, if you could just introduce yourself.
Absolutely. Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Laura Reed, and I'm the Chief Nurse Exec for the University of Minnesota Medical Center. I've been an RN for 35-plus years. I appreciate the opportunity to share information with you today about the amazing care provided at the University of Minnesota Medical Center. I want to begin by sharing a bit about how we approach nurse staffing at our hospital and as part of our commitment to providing quality care and improving the health of our patients. First of all, I'm proud of all the RN staff that we have in place to help us consider our nurse staffing levels 24/7. And they do that based on the needs of the patient and the skill set of the staff that are present on the care team. Allow me to share a few details to illustrate how we would manage staffing levels if you turn to us for care at the University of Minnesota Medical Center. We ask each unit to participate in an annual, or more often if needed, staffing conversation with leadership and frontline staff to understand the changing complexities of our patient population. As stated earlier, that is definitely occurring throughout our house. And what is working now about the staffing model and what needs to change? If at any time leadership, frontline staff, or medical providers note that there are concerns, we re-examine needs and patient population changes and adjust accordingly. We also provide charge nurse education about the importance of their decision-making related to providing safe and competent coverage for any number of scenarios that may present itself on a particular unit setting. We orient all staff on units to make sure that they know who to call if they have a concern about staffing to again ensure safe and high-quality care. Our administrative nursing supervisor has day-to-day accountability to ensure adequate staffing and support for the teams on the units. Every day, every shift, if a care team member believes that they need additional support for patient care safety, we try to meet that need in a safe manner for our patients. What I want to impress upon you today is that overall the system works. It allows us to flex up and down constantly to meet the changing needs. We are able to continually tap into the knowledge and skills of the care team members at the bedside to determine the best course of action. That means doctors, nurses, nutritionists, therapists, technicians, and all others involved in the care are committed to one goal, quality care for our patients. I also hope you noted that we recognize that even though we do try to do it right every day, we have put into place methodology, evaluation, improvement, and communication related to when we may not meet the needs. As a registered nurse and the leader of University of Minnesota Medical Center, I can tell you that House File 1654 is not necessary. At University of Minnesota Medical Center, we are committed to creating an environment that continually shows we are listening to our frontline team members. Members of the care team, no matter what their role or title, are able to request additional support for the patient if they believe that's needed. This approach of using direct bedside judgment is key to ensuring those with the direct line of sight to the patient can help determine the way to meet the patient's needs. This approach takes into account the unique and individual needs of the patient, as well as the skills and expertise and training of the team. We believe that the mandated staffing quota approach outlined in House File 1654 is the wrong government intervention to improve health care, because it takes the staffing decisions out of the hands of the people who understand the needs best. In my experience, moving care decisions further and further away from the bedside, where you have frontline nurses and nursing operations leadership, it does not improve care. The proposed measure would tie our hands with expensive, unneeded quotas in a rapidly changing healthcare environment that is demanding consideration of new models. Finally, it's important for you to know that University of Minnesota Medical Center, like all Minnesota hospitals, are many statewide task force, work groups, and other endeavors to continually seek ways to improve our care, because we know that will be necessary in the future. These groups study, collaborate, and continually seek ways to improve on our already high standards of care. I would encourage the committee to find time to hear about those efforts, and we do believe that we could improve and continue to improve on our high standards of care. I urge you to oppose House File 1654 and focus on the things that we can agree to work on to improve the health care in Minnesota. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for being here. Welcome to the committee. Just introduce yourself and proceed.
Sure. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. I am Diane Twiddell, the Chief Nursing Officer for the Mayo Clinic Health System, Southeast Minnesota Region. I am here today to share Mayo Clinic and Mayo Clinic Health System's opposition to House File 1654. There are 12 hospitals in our system that range in size from critical access to a large tertiary academic medical center. First, I want to emphasize our commitment to patient safety. The needs of the patient come first is the primary value at Mayo Clinic, and we strive to ensure that we provide the best care to every patient every day. The legislation you are discussing today does not advance the goal of improved patient outcomes or quality. It is a one-size-fits-all approach that is solely based upon patient volumes and not patient complexity, acuity, or comorbidities. The individual needs of the patient must be the primary driver of a patient's nursing care needs, not a ratio. At Mayo Clinic, we use an acuity-based staffing system that depends upon the experience, professional judgment, and critical thinking of the bedside RN to assess patient care needs. This works by having the bedside RNs evaluate individual patient needs for nursing care, use their professional assessment of the patient's condition, and based on those inputs into our acuity system, three times a day, charge nurses develop unit-specific reports to determine the staffing needs for the next shift. In addition, if the patient's need for nursing care changes at any time, we can update our assessment to help update the data. This system allows us to understand the complexity of patients, to appropriately use RNs, and effectively allocate nursing staff to safely meet patient care requirements. We believe this proactive approach is successful in providing high-quality nursing care, enhanced patient satisfaction, and nursing staff satisfaction. This approach allows us to determine current staffing needs as well as to anticipate future staffing needs and to build staff schedules. This is where healthcare is moving today, meeting the individual needs of our patients. Mandated staffing ratios or quotas do not take into account the constantly changing individualized needs of our highly acute hospitalized patients. In addition to taking into account patient acuity and complexity, staffing needs to be flexible. Staffing is dynamic. Charge nurses, in cooperation with our nurse leaders, decide where RNs are needed. If we need additional staff, we look throughout the hospital to give us a big picture perspective. This encourages our nurses to think globally and act locally. We schedule a hospital for a typical day, and the atypical happens every day. An ice storm overwhelms our emergency room with car accidents or falls. Desperately sick flu victims need immediate attention. What do we do? Yes, we call in additional staff. We empower our nurses and caregivers to notify managers of staffing needs, and we respond. Finally, Mayo Clinic is an integrated clinical practice. People come to Mayo Clinic for the team-based approach. This bill will undermine that care delivery by requiring us to focus on numbers of RNs rather than other care providers that will improve patient outcomes, such as physicians, pharmacists, discharge planners, dietitians, or respiratory therapists. We are focused on ensuring our patients have the best outcomes. This proposal is focused on one input that does not take into account the broader care team or the individual needs of the patient. The only outcome of this legislation would be to force us to staff patients by a headcount, not by individual patient care needs, and not based on the professional judgment of nurses. I've spent my whole career in healthcare. I'm a registered nurse who cares passionately about the profession of nursing. I'm a nurse who is absolutely committed to delivering the best care for every patient every day. Mandated staffing quotas and ratios will not improve patients' outcomes and will not improve quality of care of our patients. Having a process that assures that we are meeting individual patient needs for nursing care is the answer. Thank you.
Thank you. I understand we also have Mr. Graves from the Chamber of Commerce who wants to testify. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Bentley Graves. I'm the Director of Healthcare and Transportation Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. As many of you know, the Minnesota Chamber represents about 2,300 businesses statewide of all sizes and kinds. I'm here today to speak in opposition to House File 1654. Our Minnesota hospitals are on the forefront of creating new and innovative models of care delivery to provide the highest quality of care with the greatest patient satisfaction while working to reduce the overall cost of healthcare. In fact, the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality ranks Minnesota's health systems as the best in the nation, with care at hospitals as one of the major contributors. HealthGrades ranks Minnesota hospitals in Minneapolis and St. Paul as the best in the nation among metro areas of at least 1 million on 13 indicators of patient safety. Evidence-based studies have demonstrated that government-imposed nurse-to-patient ratios have increased the cost of healthcare without improving quality. The majority of Minnesotans receive their health insurance through their employer. And again, as an organization that represents employers of all sizes across the state, we approach questions of health policy with a very careful eye towards cost. House File 1654 will increase the cost of hospital care without improving quality, safety, or access to care. I ask the legislature to respect the professionalism and commitment to quality and safety of our Minnesota hospitals by opposing this legislation. The Minnesota Chamber supports our hospitals in making their own decisions about staffing and the composition of care team to reflect the needs of their patients and the skills of its workforce. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here. Is there anyone else in the audience who wants to testify to the bill? Okay, come forward, please. Welcome to the committee. If you could introduce yourself and then proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chairperson and committee members. My name is Catherine Drusch. I've been an RN for 25 years at North Memorial Hospital. Prior to that, I worked with an agency that went from hospital to hospital in the Minnesota metro area. And prior to that, I worked at a nursing home. So 28 years in nursing. I know I'm not on the list, but I appreciate this moment. I am feeling kind of impassioned at listening to the testimony. Working 28 years as a nurse, I've seen many different types of nursing management, distribution of staff in different roles. At one time, we had module. A type of system of staffing where the RNs worked in one area, collaborated with management. The RNs worked with the nursing assistants, and we worked in groups. Systems have changed, but really everything comes back around. What I don't hear today that is really causing some sorrow for me is the fact that patients are not being put first. Minnesota nurses in general would not be speaking up. We go home and complain to our family members. We complain to our community some days where we feel we failed to deliver a gold standard. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really matter to anybody else except when you're the patient at the bedside. And I almost want to cry right now. We have a lot of people here today in the audience, and I'm not looking for something except to provide very good care for my patient. I work in the float unit. Recently, I was in an area where I was working in the basement. I had three patients on a medical hold. This unit is only open to eight patients. I contacted the assistant nurse by phone, left a message. I contacted the director of the department, and the manager was notified. We didn't have a way to take breaks. We didn't have a way to relieve the nursing assistant that was doing a one-to-one on a patient of a medical hold. Sometimes safe staffing isn't about the number of patients, but how can we safely deliver care, which does mean washing a patient, giving meds, completing treatments, and finding out what the needs of the patient are. Sometimes they need a hope that their needs are going to be met so that they can complete their cares to go home. It sounds really simple. I'm not trying to oversimplify it, but the ideal picture that administration paints just does not exist. It doesn't exist, and that's my frustration. When you speak to someone and they continue to pick up their papers and their coffee and they go sit in a meeting, you know, some days we should stop having meetings and come help pass fresh water. My patient would really like fresh water more than once a day. And I know that seems really simple, but that is a basic need. Family members need explanation regarding the care of their patients. Our patients are demanding that their nurses advocate for them. So it sounds simple. It should be simple. You're right, it's not about the numbers. But when we ask for help and we don't get it, what are we supposed to do? We are submitting this issue to you because you have authority, just like we do in the hospital world. My charge nurse partners with me. We submit it to the manager, to the administrative manager. We're submitting this to you. We need you to step forward in leadership and represent the family members, yourselves, and help us find a collaborative, transparent solution. Why is administration afraid of transparency? Ask them. Because we are willing to show you what's going on. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Is there anyone else? Thank you to the audience for being here, but we try to refrain from demonstrating within the committee room just out of respect for all sides. Representative Atkins, and I'll just make sure anyone else in the audience who wants to testify. Okay, well, we will close the testimony part of the meeting, and Representative Atkins, we'll go to questions in a minute. I just didn't know if you had anything you wanted to add.
Just at the end, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I've got a question for the testifiers from the hospital associations that were up here.
Representative Grunhagen, and then whichever one of you would like to respond.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, thanks for your testimony. The question I've got, obviously you must have seen that the handout from the Nurses Association that we just received. And I've been kind of looking that over during the testimony. But, you know, based on your testimony, I think if I remember right, there was something about this is a national movement. Do you think the concerns mentioned in this handout have been embellished, or there's an agenda to put out this type of information to try to increase staffing levels? I think Mr. Mass, you made those comments, if I remember right.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Massa.
Members of the committee, Representative Grunhagen, we have not had an opportunity to look at the handout that you've been provided, so I can't specifically address that.
Okay.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. The other question I have for you are, you know, I've seen this statistic before, which is also quoted on these information. that the quality care rating has fallen in Minnesota, according to the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, from 75 down to 67. Do you have any thoughts, or any of the testifiers up there, as to why that rating was reduced for the state of Minnesota?
Mr. Massa.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, as I indicated in my testimony, our members are working very hard to improve care. We were fortunate to have a contract with the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services for the last 3 years to help improve care. But the rest of the country is working very hard to improve their level of care as well. So it's kind of a moving target. We continue to provide very high-quality care in our state and to improve, but everyone else is improving at the same time. So I think from my point of view is just want to share that we are very committed to keeping our numbers high and moving ahead as faster than anyone else in the country.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. So do any of the testifiers up there have any idea why our rating was reduced from 75 down to 67 in 2014?
I'd like to speak, Madam
Reed?
Chair. This is Laura Reed. I'd like to speak just specifically to the University of Minnesota Medical Center. I can say that I'm not familiar with any specific reasons behind this statistic, but I can tell you that from the last 2 years that I've been with University of Minnesota Medical Center, we've seen an improvement in many of our quality ratings as it relates to morbidity and mortality and our readmission rate. And a lot of that is due to the input and the successful teamwork that is happening with our staff nurses and the medical providers. So,
Representative Grunhagen.
Just in closing, here, last question for you is, do you believe, based on the national movement, that the number of incidences filed by nurses and the statistics that they're putting forth have been embellished in any way, or do you believe they've represent an accurate accounting of what the concerns are by the Nurses Association?
Mr. Moss.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Representative Grunhagen. We have not actually had a chance to look at all of the concern for safe staffing forms. We're in the process of trying to get copies of those, the ones that were provided to the Minnesota Department of Health, so we can do our own analysis. But so I can't speak to them having not looked at those individual forms.
Representative Grunhagen.
I've got a question for the Nurses Association, Mary Turner.
And just while we have these folks at the table, I've just had a quick question kind of following up, and then we can go back to that. But in regards to these safe staffing forms, is there, you know, in terms of, I guess maybe to the chief nursing operators or officials here, is there either a response that's provided, or how is that handled internally? How are those forms handled? I just am interested from your perspective.
I can tell you from Diane Twiddell from Mayo Clinic, I can tell you that this has been a very limited issue within the Mayo Clinic health system. We have not necessarily received a copy of the forms when the form has gone forward. It has gone forward to the Nurses Association, etc., but not necessarily always brought to our management, nursing management's attention. If anyone that is brought forward, we certainly do an internal review, talk with the staff nurses who have submitted it, and discuss and look for areas of improvement.
And so if there have been reports that have been put forward by a nurse in one of your facilities, how have you found out if it hasn't come through your nurse managers?
Basically, we may hear about it through the rumor mill that they submitted one. So it isn't necessarily always very transparent that we know that something has gone forward.
Okay. And so then do your nurse managers on the floor, is it communicated clearly that if they're filling one of those out that they are strongly encouraged or mandated to first report it to their superior, and they're just not doing that? Or is that not the expectation of the hospital necessarily?
I would I can tell you from an expectation of nursing leadership, we would like that brought to our attention to the nursing managers. I'm just saying it's not necessarily happening.
Okay. Thank you. And that clarity, I think there's just some confusing communication pieces around these forms and the chain of command. And assuming that everybody is putting patient safety first, you would certainly think they'd want it brought to their manager's attention first and foremost, if they feel unsafe or if their patients are unsafe. Members, we have a couple other questions on the list. Are they, and I just want to say, while we have these folks at the table, are they to the Hospital Association? We have Purcell and Loeffler. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In the testimony, and I think all three of you alluded to the fact that there may be something approaching standard operating procedures for nurse staffing. I didn't hear that. I didn't hear SOPs. I'm familiar, as having run a laboratory for a number of years, we have SOPs, right? Do you have something like that, standard operating procedures for how you would set up a staffing for shifts?
Ms. Reed.
Madam Chair and committee members, yes, we do. We have what we call our staffing guidelines of how we would communicate and make decisions related to the staffing requirements from shift to shift. And sometimes, honestly, in some of our ICUs, many of the members that are here in the chamber would recognize it can change minute to minute or hour to hour. And then what you would do in those special circumstances in order to meet the needs of the patients and of the staff. So we do have operating procedures, and we also have mechanisms that we have staffing councils that include leadership and staff nurses so that they can continually evaluate that month to month, looking at patterns or trends related to what our current vacancy rate is or if we have leaves of absence, et cetera.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you for that. And so it you evaluate, I mean, doing this on the fly, and I understand that. And you know, that's a tough goal for everybody, nurses included, right? So if that's the situation then, and it's evaluated as you go through a day, is there, I can remember the term now, I want to say reservoir, that wasn't the right word, but on call, there are nurses that are on call, are there, you know, 5 miles away, 10 miles away. How do you handle that? That you know you have somebody. You get 3 patients through the ER. You know you got code 4s going on. What are you doing? How do you handle that?
Ms. Twiddell.
All right, Madam Chair. I would just say that one of the major things we work on is how do we build so that we have surge capacity so that we can meet those staffing needs that come in. Those can be through a variety of ways. They can be through float pools at a hospital site. It could be on call. It could be cross-training across multiple units based in having people float back and forth based on what census and appropriate training is done. So I would say that we're constantly looking and refining what are those things we need to do so that we can meet patient surge.
And one
Ms. Representative Purcell.
One final, I guess, and is this set up in your view, in your mind, to err on the side of patient safety, that so we don't have things going wrong? I mean, is there that safety factor applied that we try and apply to risk assessment, the risk evaluation?
Ms. Twiddell.
Yes, Madam Chair. I believe strongly at the Mayo Clinic that we really have a sophisticated system that has helped us develop trends so that we're focusing on what are we seeing with patients and really drilling down to what is the amount of staff we need every day. And I feel very, very confident that we are staffing appropriately and using our evidence-based method to do that.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I thought I was on my last one. So if there was a safe staffing applied, I mean, what's the downside of this? Is it cost? Is that all we're talking about here, or what what's the net? Because it can't be just about numbers, because you have acuity as well. So what's the downside to it?
What I really see is...
Ms. Twiddell.
Oh, I'm sorry. The one thing that I truly see is that we're managing to, you would manage to a number versus to the individualized need of what a patient needs for nursing care. That has been the hallmark of our system at Mayo Clinic, and I believe that sometimes you could manage to a number, but they may need more than that. And we really feel that by measuring the patient's need for nursing care, that really drives the practice and increases our patient safety.
I'll quit. Okay.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I know this is an issue of interest to a lot of people, but we're at 10 after 2, and I think I've identified an issue that actually bridges these two groups of people, and that is the concern that we have adequate funding within our healthcare system. Because we have spreadsheets that we are told the original ones released were wrong, but I think the theme is very clear, that there are going to be major, major cuts, hundreds of millions of dollars of cuts, through the cutbacks in medical assistance and the elimination of Minnesota Care, and that's going to put patient care safety in jeopardy, something that I know both sides of this issue are greatly concerned about. And we have... They share an agenda with everyone else in this room who came to respectfully try and understand the over 800 lines of individual budget decisions that compromise our multi-billion dollar health and human services budget, and the hundreds of pages of policy, some of which were not heard before this. And so I would really like, now that Chair Dean is back in the room, for us to get to what was the main agenda item before us today, which is to understand and present the health and human services budget and understand the process going forward by which everyone in this room and everyone who's watching on TV can understand what is the budget that you're asking people to react to, perhaps even as early as tomorrow.
Representative Dean. Chair Dean.
Madam Chair, Representative Loeffler, right now we're on Representative Adkins' bill, and we will address that with an update when this bill is concluded.
Well,
Representative Loeffler.
Madam Chair and Representative Dean, respectfully, there's only 20 minutes left, and we have, this is an information-only item, and I'm sure Representative Adkins would be glad to step back and let this issue simmer a bit, since it's information-only, and let us focus on the issue that will impact hospitals, nurses, the patients that they care for, the people with disabilities who are dependent on medical assistance, and the seniors who are dependent on medical assistance. And without the budget spreadsheets, you still have a hearing scheduled tomorrow, and we can't have an effective hearing if people do not understand what it is that you're proposing.
Chair Dean.
Madam Chair, Representative Loeffler, we will address that when we're done with the agenda item that is before us and that we are currently debating. Madam Chair, thank you.
Madam Chair,
okay.
I would like to move that we lay over this item.
Okay. Representative Loeffler moves to lay this bill on the table.
It's not before.
Oh, excuse me, Representative Loeffler, this is an informational hearing only, so we can't do that. But I do think it's important to note, just the people in the audience, the agendas in front of us with House File 1654 and House File 1638, and that's the agenda that we're following. We know that things around here, certainly during budget times, need to be nimble due to the requirements of staff and things, making sure that we do things right, so we're putting accurate information in front of people. And so I think it's in the best interest of everybody and people in the audience that we have that in front of us. Representative Zerwas.
Well, and Madam Chair, you know, out of respect, I think the staff who's upstairs literally trying to work on the spreadsheets, that doesn't just happen. Mr. Berg is up there currently working on that, and I think that, and out of respect to Representative Adkins and the advocates that have shown up to hear about this bill and be a part of this informational hearing, I think it's somewhat disrespectful to think that we're going to tell those people, I know you were first on the agenda, I know you've cleared a day, I know you've come to the Capitol, but we want to have some infighting, so go wait around for a couple hours. We'll get back to you. I think that's really rude. So let's follow our agenda. Let's give staff the proper time they need to get the spreadsheets and the bill in order that it needs to be so we can discuss it and all literally be on the same page. And let's let Representative Atkins present his bill.
Madam Chair?
Okay, and we are going to get back to the bill because we don't have much time left. So
I would just note
to this bill.
Even if the spreadsheets were ready right now,
Madam Chair?
Probably not.
Madam Chair?
Chair Dean.
Madam Chair?
Chair Dean.
I would respectfully ask that the minority members respect the chair and respect what is before the committee at this time.
Okay, to Representative Atkins' bill, do we have any further questions for the testifiers in front of us? Otherwise, we will bring people from the Nurses Association back up for further questions. Okay, if we could, I believe, excuse me, Representative Murphy, to these testifiers.
Thank you, Chair Mack. You know, I practice nursing just like you have and know the variability of a day and understand the responses about problem solving, et cetera. The question I want to ask you are there times when the nurses come to you, nurses, individual nurses or nurses, come to you and say, I feel like I need additional staff for a rationale, and then they fill in their rationale, and those requests are denied. Does that happen?
Ms. Twiddell.
Madam Chair, I cannot, in thinking back of my time at Mayo Clinic, I have not found that we have not been able to find a workaround, or it's really about thinking globally, acting locally, looking at where do you have the resources and do you need to pull and mobilize from other areas. I know that every nurse leader wants to do the very best, and I would say, could it happen? It could. However, I do think nursing leadership is fully engaged and wants this to be the best it can be. We want staff to be there for our patients.
All right. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I, like probably most in the room, feel that sense of urgency about moving on to the budget. So I don't want to belabor this point. But I will say this, because certainly as a practicing nurse, there were times when I needed and asked for extra staff and it was declined. And I know that that is the case for lots of practicing nurses, and that is not an indictment on nursing leadership or hospitals. Mm-hmm. And so for how many years we have been discussing this issue, what we haven't really wrestled with as a legislature yet is what if the nurses are telling us the truth? And what if they are feeling a lot of peril in the care that they're providing for patients and they don't have a way out of it because of the financial pressures on the hospitals, the decision-making that's happening? And so when the testimony is this is being driven by a national union as a way to say this isn't really an issue for us, I continue to worry that we're not really putting before us the issue at hand. And it keeps coming back. And we, you know, Chair Atkins, Representative Atkins, he did a really important thing a year and a half ago and put before the legislature legislation that was going to give us some information to move this issue forward from the stalemate that we're in, and we're back here again. And we're going to keep coming back here again. And we will stay in stalemate for a while, but one of these days we're going to have to figure out our way together. And I have a lot of faith in the hospitals and a lot of faith in the nurses, but the fact that we just are in this paralyzed stalemate tells me that there's an issue here that we're not willing to really address, that we're afraid of it. And one of these days we're going to have to get unafraid and come together and figure it out. And it is not an either-or situation, because I think everybody wants patients cared for safely. I do. But all those nurses that are here in the red shirts, they're not here for theater. They're not. They're here for a reason. And we should be paying attention to that. So I know we've got other stuff we need to do. I want to move on. But we're not doing our jobs right now, from my perspective, if we keep kicking this one down the road. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. And I just have one quick follow-up. Last summer, I took several tours of different hospitals in the metro area for both this issue and other issues related to our hospitals. And one concern that came up with how nurse staff ratio or some of these safe staffing levels would, the logistics, some of the challenges and around something like lunch breaks, bathroom breaks, some of just the common sense kind of tricky issues that would have to be dealt with, because if I understand it correctly, these levels would have to be maintained kind of no matter what and would take away some of that flexibility. And I'm just trying to understand, is that a reality? And I'll maybe ask also MNA to respond to this, because there's maybe two different viewpoints on it. But I would just be interested to know, you know, some of the challenges that presents in terms of managing the floors and managing this and what that presents.
Madam Chair and committee members, Laura Reed, I could not agree more with what's been stated so far. And I do believe that we need to consider what is the process and communication going forward of how we will continue to address the issue. But the related process question that you just asked for a bill specific in nature as the one before us now is very difficult to actually organize and orchestrate in real life. So those are some of the things that we all want to provide excellent quality care for our patients and our families. But how we do that and how we communicate about things like this to each other so that we can actually deal with it in mechanisms that are required for us as a hospital are critical. As sad as everyone is about the fact that we're rehaving this conversation again, I have to tell you that seeing these staffing forms in front of me and knowing that I'm not getting communicated as a nurse leader in my organization about that is very troubling. Because we have requirements, too, that we need to do and meet and make sure that we are doing a deeper dive to address the real issues before us. And they're not going to get easier. So I really appreciate you asking the logistical question because it would be challenging. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions for these testifiers? Representative Franson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is, and I don't know who up there can ask or answer this, but how many nurses do we have in the state of Minnesota, and how many nurses does MNA represent?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I believe in my testimony I indicated there are 95,700 licensed registered nurses in the state, and just over 20% of that number are members of the Minnesota Nurses Association.
Follow-up question, Madam
Chair. Representative Franson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So then I'm wondering, so we're hearing from the MNA about the staffing issues. What about those that do not belong in MNA and how they feel about the staffing issues? We don't see that side here today.
Mr. Massa.
Yeah.
Or anyone who would like to respond.
I don't know how to respond to that. I guess, you know, the Minnesota Nurses Association has organized and, you know, works with the legislative process in a way that that individual nurses do not. So I think you would have to talk to a lot of nurses to get perspective on how they all feel.
And Representative Franson, maybe when we'll have the Nurses Association come up here and they can maybe say if they're working with the other groups or how that works. Representative Franson.
And then, thank you, Madam Chair. One more question. So there's a lot of letters up there. Are any of those letters that you're aware of from any non-MNA members?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, since we have not looked at them, I couldn't answer that.
Okay, we will bring the Nurses Association for now because I believe that we have a few questions for them. And then also just out of curiosity, I'm wondering if there's anyone from the Department of Health here for a brief question on these nurse staff ratio forms. Is there anyone here? Okay, I don't see anyone. I just would be interested in asking the department if, and I don't know, maybe MNA knows the answer to this, but if the department, if they've gotten all these forms, or Representative Atkins, maybe you know, they've gotten all these forms, if they are, what the department's doing with them, are they cross-referencing them with the hospitals to see, to kind of rectify the concerns and address the hospitals? So just to put on the record, I'd be interested to know from the department's view what their take is on these forms and how they're moving through, because obviously it is concerning how many you have in front of you. So, Representative Atkins?
I can't speak for the department, Madam Chair.
Fair enough. Representative Grunhagen did have a question for the Nurses Association. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I really respect and appreciate the nursing organization. I was hospitalized about 10 years ago for 10 days, and my nurse was an angel, I think. So So I appreciate what you do. It's 24/7. You take care of some of the most vulnerable. So thank you for that, and nurses in general. But my question is, why do you think, and I know people, I'm associated with the staffing people in my hospitals, my district, and why do you think management would decide to staff hospital floors below what is necessary in order to endanger patient health? Why would they make that decision? I have my own thoughts, but I mean, why would you say that, you know, when I look at all the complaints here, you come to the conclusion that management is making decisions to staff levels at hospitals that actually endanger patient health. Why do you think they make that decision?
If you could just introduce yourself and then answer the question.
Chair, members of the committee, I'm Shannon Cunningham, political director for the Minnesota Nurses Association. Representative Gruenhagen, I think that you may have suspicions of the same answer that we have, but we also understand that hospitals, they are a place that care for people, but they are also a business. And it becomes, we don't think that they deliberately set out to understaff, but when you have, you know, six patients who are coming in unexpectedly with a higher acuity level than you were planning, the problem comes in when they don't add staff on when they really need them. When our nurses, our dozens of nurses who are here today, are working in a hospital unit and they have, you know, six additional patients with very high acuity levels who are very sick and need extra care, and our nurses go to management and say, we need more nurses, we need more help, and they say no, we believe that a lot of those decisions are based on their budgets and the lines that they need to stay between on the spreadsheets, and unfortunately it's the patients who suffer.
Representative Gruenhagen.
Well, thank you for that response. And the so do you believe that I'll just share one of my biases, though. You know, I was on the school board for a number of years. I was chief negotiator for part of that time. And one of the principles was not to negotiate away managerial rights, okay? And unfortunately, this bill negotiates away managerial rights. And so I got a very hard time supporting that. But on the other hand, I do think there are factors that are stressing the hospitals. Obviously, a lot of independent hospitals are joining larger conglomerates for financial reasons. And you see even some areas of the rural area. We've had, in my district, we had one hospital close a few years ago. So I do empathize with your position, but I don't believe this is necessarily the solution. And last just follow-up quick question is, do you believe the drop in quality rating that's in the materials that you hand out is directly due to the staffing levels of nurses in the hospitals? And I don't know the factors that the healthcare research and quality use, but you evidently believe that the staffing levels have something to do with the downgrade.
Representative, thank you. We will be the first to tell you that these forms in front of you are anecdotal. This is a snapshot of the information that our nurses provide us in order for us to kind of get an idea of how bad staffing levels are in the hospital. We know that in 2014, the number of Concern for Safe Staffing forms, not prompted by M&A doing any sort of media campaign or anything, the number of forms almost doubled. We also know during that same time, the quality reporting went down. There could be multiple factors based on that, but I think that in the hearts and the minds of our nurses, staffing certainly has something to do with that.
Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members, and Representative Atkins. I talked to some folks and was convinced to sign on as a co-author on this bill pretty early on, and got some concern right away from the hospital association. I just think that this is a little bit bigger issue, and you know, I don't know that this bill as it is today is the answer to what's going on. I have concerns about allowing flexibility for hospital staff and hospital administrators to properly, you know, take care of their unique patient population. I'll tell you, I spent, when I was waiting for my heart transplant that I waited, I didn't get one, they did a different surgery, but I spent 2 years on the list and 5.5 months in Station 10, the old cardiac intensive care unit in the basement. And you look at the nurses, and you know, my nurses were the ones that day and night took care of me. I think I have my scrapbook from when I was there when I was 15, and it's almost all photos of me visiting with my nurses or getting my butt handed to me in cribbage or me absolutely schooling them in Mario Kart or, you know, and I just think that's just their role is so vital in what they do and how they take care of patients, critically, acutely sick patients, and then patients that, you know, quite frankly, need a different type of caretaker at a different time. My concern, however, is at that time I was in an ICU where every other bed was someone directly out of some type of coronary artery bypass or other heart surgery. They were either on vents or just off of vents one day. A lot of them were one-on-one staffed or one-on-two. And quite frankly, I was sick. Don't get me wrong. I was sick, but I didn't need that type of intense care. I needed to be in the ICU, but I did not need that type of care. And so the hospital, Abbott, was able to be flexible enough to match me up with a nurse that, you know, had the easiest load of the shift, quite frankly, or that, you know, that could take on another patient if they're one-to-one or if they're just someone that was just about to go to the step-down unit, because I didn't require much. So I think that flexibility allowed them to more efficiently manage their unit. And we see that time and time again. Just outside of my district in Princeton is the Princeton Hospital, where when I met with them, they said, you know, we have a wide range of how we staff our emergency room. We have nursing assistants. We have emergency room EMTs. We have advanced practice nurses. And we have a hospitalist, along with our nurses. If we are in a tight ratio setting, that loses our flexibility, and we would lose some of our staff, likely some of our advanced practice staff. And so I want to make sure whatever we do at a policy level in the state of Minnesota helps keep Minnesotans safe in the hospital and get absolutely the highest quality of care possible. We deserve it. We absolutely deserve it, and you deserve the support from your employers to deliver that care. I'm just not sure that a strict ratio or a strict mandate in state statute that would apply across the board is the best way to get there. But we got to find something to do. And I apologize, I've been in and out a little bit working on some other issues today. It's that time of year. But if no one's mentioned that, or if someone's already mentioned this, I'm sorry. But I'm very disappointed in the study that was conducted. It should have been noted immediately by the Department of Health that they didn't have the proper information to match up the dates, and they should have come back to the legislature and asked for an extension rather than to spend that money and get us garbage, because that study is worthless because the freaking dates don't even match up. So what are we supposed to do with that? So I think there's enough blame to go around on that. And I'm frustrated that we wait a year and we are absolutely no closer to figuring out what we need to do to move forward. So I'm interested in working with Representative Atkins and seeing how we can address this. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And what time are you looking to conclude today, Madam Chair?
Pretty quickly. We're a little bit past our time, and understand everyone has caucus to get to, so we want to wrap up in the next 5-10 minutes tops. Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I deferred to, at the outset, because informational hearings, I think, are you're best off hearing from the experts on either side and the people that come here to testify about it. But I did want to share just a couple comments. First, my thank you to Chairman Dean for hearing this bill. This is an important bill. I was told that it might be because your bill isn't quite ready yet. I was told it was perhaps because the hospitals had expressed some negative comments about your bill, and maybe you were going to, through me, stick it to the hospitals a little bit. Regardless of what the reason for the hearing is, it is a critically important issue. And there are professionals on both sides who I believe are concerned about the quality of care for patients in Minnesota. But, folks, it is not completely working. Even if you only take half of these to be true, and I believe that they're all true, but they represent at least one patient each, perhaps multiple patients, dozens of patients each, all across Minnesota. And that tells me that things are not quite working as well as we would hope. And as Representative Grunhagen noted, the ratings, I believe it was dropped from 75 to 68. I think our hospitals and our nurses do a fine job, but we've got more to do. This shows, all of this shows, that we've got more to do. It's interesting to me, I noted the opponents made a couple of points. One is that it takes the decisions out of the hands of those on the front line. I'd ask that you look at the bill, and on page 2, starting on line 2.23, the folks that we are charging with looking at this are folks who represent the Minnesota Hospital Association, Minnesota Nurse Association, two members of the public, two members of direct care registered nurses who represent Greater Minnesota, two members from the metropolitan area registered nurses, two members direct care registered nurses who represent hospitals licensed for 25 beds or less, and two that represent 25 beds or more. These are exactly the folks that you want to have making these sorts of calls. They're right there. They're hands-on. The MNA represents, and I know that the question came up earlier, they represent 80% of the nurses in hospitals who are doing critical care, direct care. So these are the folks that are right there on the front lines. There was also the point made by the opponents, and I wrote it down, that it doesn't take into account patient acuity, individual nurse ability and experience. Again, the opposite is true. If you look at the text of the bill, the four corners of the bill itself, look on page 3, line 3.18, talks about the composition of the skills and roles available, patient acuity, experience level of the registered nurse staff. These are the factors that would be taken into account by this group, Representative Ross. Unit activity level, such as admission, discharges, transfers, the availability of additional staffing resources, hospital-wide census and staffing. So it takes into account other sorts of professionals that are in the building. So just if you read the bill, I think it actually addresses what the opponents have raised. But as great a threat to patient safety as these staffing issues are, I actually think the greatest threat is the one that you are about to take up, and that is the bill that is about to come before you with nearly $1 billion in cuts is what your focus needs to be. So while I appreciate you taking a few minutes, well, more like a couple hours, to hear this bill, when you're talking about eliminating Minnesota Care and putting those folks in MNsure, which I think Representative Dean was looking to eliminate MNsure. So I don't know where you're looking to put these people, Representative Dean. I really respect what you folks are about to do, and I wish you the very best as you try to deal with $1 billion in cuts. At the same time, we've got a $2 billion surplus. So I applaud you. I look forward to seeing what the product is. And with that, Madam Chair, thank you for a couple minutes to visit about my bill.
Thank you. Okay, members, at this time that will conclude our informational hearing on this bill. Thank you, Representative Atkins, and to all the people that came for this. It's a very valuable conversation, and I'll follow up offline with the department on the status of the nursing forms and how the department's handling that. Representative Dean.
Chair Deans.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I have an update. So I've been talking with the fiscal staff upstairs in the wood shop, and they are working away. The spreadsheet will be recalculated and represented sometime in the next several hours, but there was a large issue with DHS and MMB and one of their calculations in the in a fiscal note. So we're working through that. Talked to Mr. Marks, and I'm confident that the contours and the shape of the bill will be very, very close, if not identical to what it is currently. However, I don't want to do a walkthrough until we have a button-down fiscal note, or excuse me, a button-down spreadsheet and a button-down page and line at the same time, which is the way I like to do things. So what we're going to do is we're going to walk through tomorrow, a half hour after Ways and Means. Ways and Means will readjust the target tomorrow morning. We will meet a half hour after, or 15 minutes after Ways and Means. We will do our walkthrough. And then on Monday, what I would intend to do would be to come in at 12:30 in room 5. We will have public testimony, then we will break, and then we will do our markup. And that will allow us to keep on schedule, and it will also allow the public time to react for that without adjusting any of those dates, and it will give us our numbers and our pages and lines to match up at the same time we go through it, which is the way I want to do it. So with that, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and appreciate the update. Can you tell us what time Ways and Means is so that the audience and others might have a sense of what part of the day that is?
Noon.
Thank you. And, you know, the best budgets don't reflect just the ideas of the people around this table, but it also reflects the input and insights and knowledge of the people in the audience, and that's typically reflected in amendments. And can we talk about amendment deadlines?
Yep.
Chair Dean.
Amendment deadline will be on Saturday at noon, and Ms. Iverson has a funeral on Saturday, so they'll probably be posted sometime Saturday evening, but the deadline will be Saturday noon for amendments.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair, and Chair Dean. You know, part of the reason for public testimony is to inform our amendments and to give us ideas about things that we might want to adjust and tweak, and so I'm wondering if you might allow us some flexibility on Monday if we hear things in testimony that we didn't think about after the walkthrough that comes from what we hear from people outside, if you'd give us some flexibility on that.
Chair Dean.
Well, we've had requests for testimony since Monday, since posting, so we've had a lot of opportunity for people to weigh in. Again, I would anticipate that the contours of the bill will be similar or identical. So we will keep our noon deadline, but of course the final decision on any changes would be at the discretion of the chair at that time.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate you bringing us up to date. We know that this is difficult work, and we have really good staff who work really, really hard, and we have House Research staff who will now be working on Saturday, probably. But I would like to just say to everyone in the audience that we would appreciate your advice and feedback as we all work to understand the contours of this budget. Thank you.
Chair Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And also, I want to apologize for the delay in the start today. These, at the end of session, things always are a little bit fluid. So I appreciate that. Also, apologize for the delay in for the people who came for the earlier bill and the delay of that. But appreciate people, particularly those who traveled for that bill. We did have several members request information about that bill, particularly about nurse safety. So we do appreciate that, and we also appreciate the work of everybody on the committee, and would encourage folks to take a look at that bill, and if you can improve it, get the amendments in by Saturday at noon. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay.
With that, members, our next hearing is tomorrow, a half hour after Ways and Means Committee. With that, we are adjourned.